Hey guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and I hope you're all doing good. I'm sat here today working from home in my office after running in the Forest of Dean Half Marathon yesterday with a couple of my coaches. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Well, did I? So it was some miles I didn't enjoy it, but it was got my first half marathon under my belt in 3 years. So I was really happy with that. And now just continuing with the training to Europe's toughest mudder. And I'm glad I'm sat down today, put it that way. Look, guys, we've been getting some amazing feedback on the back of all the wonderful podcasts we're doing. And like I said to you, I really enjoy doing them. So let's continue with another fabulous guest today. Today, we're going to sort of switch tracks a little bit. We're not going to be so sort of in-depth on fitness and in nutrition, but we're going to be talking mindset. And you probably know this guy. If you've got some sort of ear to the sort of fitness, motivational speaking sort of industry, I am with my great friend, Mr. Pat Davili. How are you, brother?
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, are you good?
Yeah, all good. Well done on the marathon, now the half marathon.
Half. Thanks, buddy. Hey, listen, it's great to have you on. A lot of people will know about you, some won't. A lot of people will know that we're good friends. We're going to talk about our little story because we've and how we met in this podcast. But first off, Pat, let's just say people have been living under a rock and they don't know who you are, right? Who the hell is the Irishman, Pat Davili? Who is he?
I don't really have that much of an audience in the UK. I've kind of kept my head down to a certain degree the last couple of years, just doing my own thing in Ireland. But started a fitness business 5 years ago. Well, I've started a few, but this is the first one that's kind of worked. So I learned from the first two, if you want to call it learning or failure. And the current business, I set up a fitness class on my local beach with five clients that grew into a gym, grew into a large online following. Couple of best-selling books, TV work, radio work, and now I do more motivational speaking and events and retreats and online courses teaching people how to reconnect with their passions and with themselves.
I love it, mate. I love some of the stuff you're doing at the minute. Really sort of inspiring me, mate, and sort of making me think a little bit of a road I want to go down, dude. So look, we're going to get into it, Pat. I know you're a busy man. You've taken an hour and 10 minutes out for your old friend, Uncle Treggy, today. So we're going to get straight into this. Buddy, I always say this to clients that come on, right? Where did it all start? Let's go right back to when you're a kid. When did you get into sort of fitness and training and things like that? Where did it start for you, buddy? What age?
Really young, and I meet a lot of trainers who seem to have the same or very similar stories that I was into like pro wrestling and stuff when I was a kid.
What?
And wanted to be big and strong. So funnily, I messaged a training facility in the UK when I was about 12 and I said, I want to be a wrestler when I finish school. What should I do? And my dad wants me to finish school before I move to England. He's been unreasonable. And the wrestling school said, start doing judo because you learn how to fall properly and start lifting weights so you get strong. So go to school the next day, and as if by fate, there's a sign on the notice board in the school for judo sessions. So started judo. Within a couple of months, I'd won an Irish title in judo. And it was the first thing in my life. First thing in my life to give me like confidence that I had been bullied a bit as a kid. And here was something that I was doing for myself and I was enjoying, and obviously gave me a physical presence that I felt I could handle myself. And I just fell in love with martial arts, and weight training was my life for my teens. And then I think I told myself in school that I wasn't academic enough to study sports science. So there was a couple of years in college a bit lost doing geography and economics, which I had no interest in, but I felt was all I was able to do at that point. And I went to America at 18 to do the cage fighting, the MMA stuff, which is about 11 years ago. And fell back in love with the gym. So then became qualified as a trainer, went into nutrition and kind of flying through it all there. But it was just something that gave me confidence from an early age, and something that I'd played team sports up to that point. I'd been bullied a little bit. And
what happened there with the bullying, dude? When did that sort of thing start? Because I know that, you know, this is quite commonplace. A lot of the guys like listening to this might have had that themselves, or they might have had kids that have gone through that. Do you want to touch on that a little bit, buddy?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, particularly, like I say, in the fitness industry, you meet guys that are like big and jacked and strong and all this, and I can see it in them now because I've kind of done the work on myself. I can see it in a lot of them that, you know, they're still the scared child inside.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these guys you see working on nightclub doors or working on security and stuff are like just living in fear because I'm sure they came from that kind of background of being bullied and thinking that things were, you know, the world was an ugly place or whatever. Mm. But I think, yeah, silly things. I started school really young and I was the youngest in the class, was left out of things. And then I think that we all live within stories that go around in our heads and, you know, our world shows up as the story that we have. So if you think, like I say, the world is an ugly place, that's what you see. So I think I saw myself as weak and an outsider from the get-go. And then that kept coming up in my life,
right.
whether it was actually happening or not, or whether I took it more than, you know, took it as more than it actually was. You probably speak to the people that bullied me and they didn't see it as that at all, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was it.
So when you got into the judo, that everything changed, right? You became like an overnight hero.
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't this thing where, oh, I'm doing martial arts now so I can kick all my bullies' ass.
No.
Or anything like that. It was just literally something that I think up to that point I was doing things to fit in. I was, you know, playing sports that I didn't really like with the hope that I'd meet some friends or whatever. And I think when you find something you're passionate about, everything changes because you're in integrity, you're being authentic, you're doing things for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You're doing things because you enjoy them. And I think anyone you look at that's successful in life, that's a big part of the equation, is that they're doing what they enjoy. And that just shines light on you and it allows you to shine light on other people. So like Conor McGregor and these people that are so famous now for what they do, he would have started doing martial arts way before it was popular.
Yeah.
And he did it for years. And it's, you know, he's become a special character because he did what he loved, not because he did what people thought was cool, you know? So,
No, I like it.
Quite an important lesson.
Okay, dude. So look, you talk about going away to the States and doing, was it cage fighting you said, yeah?
Yeah, I went out in 2009.
Tell us more about that, my brother. Tell us more.
It wasn't big in Ireland at the time, obviously. It hadn't really taken off. And I suppose I was always a dreamer. And I just hopped online and I was losing my mind with the geography and economics degree I was doing. I had no interest. And I said, I'm going to book a trip away this summer. And a lot of the Irish go out to New York or California for the summer and get work or whatever else. But I did it a bit different. I just contacted a mixed martial arts gym out there. I actually emailed a few gyms and one guy got back to me and he said, you know, my grandfather's Irish, I'll look after you. And I ended up sleeping on the gym floor out there for 3 months.
Really?
Cleaning the gym 3 times a day, training 3 times a day. And didn't have a pot to piss in, but
yeah,
I loved
yeah.
it. Really enjoyed it. And actually met, I don't know, was I telling you that before? I met like my first mentor in fitness out there. And, you know, he taught me kettlebells and all this stuff that I had never
right.
seen before.
Right, right. What was his name, dude?
Eric Coleman. So
right.
He's like 10 years older than me at the time and he was really encouraging and, you know, encouraging me to get fights going, like professional fights and stuff like that out there, which I didn't do ultimately. But he ended up committing suicide when I came home, which was a big blow. I had seen kind of darkness in him that he wasn't happy and he didn't see potential in himself the way he saw potential in other people. And the one thing I took from, I suppose, his passing was that life is short and you got to go after what you want. So I finished out my degree, but at the same time, I started pursuing fitness qualifications, which was something, obviously, right. I put on the back burner. I got my personal training qualifications the same as everyone else did. And
yep.
then I moved to England, did a master's in nutrition just to kind of stand out a little bit and hopefully, you know, put myself a bit ahead of the curve.
Sure. Okay. Where did you study over here, buddy?
I was in Chester for 12 months. So I was in University of Chester, did the master's in nutrition and also worked full time 40 hours a week in the university gym, which was brilliant because
sure.
the students there got and the lecturers and everything, there was free personal training. So I would work as a personal trainer in the gym and the students could come in on a say Sunday and book in their personal training sessions for the week. So they'd say, right, I'm going to work with Pat at this time, this time, this time. So effectively, I was going from having no personal training experience to getting 40 hours a week working with everyone from cardiac rehabilitation to professional athletes to, you know, and you were just getting paid like a gym instructor, but it was great to get that experience.
Experience, dude. That's what counts. I love that. I love that concept.
It was cool. It was cool. It was a great way of meeting people for me coming over from Ireland to England. I played a bit of rugby league over there. I worked full time in the gym and did a few other bits and bobs. So I kind of got to know half of Chester and then came back home the following year.
Okay, so you go back to Galway in Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay, you got your masters under your belt. How old are you at the time, my friend?
22. I think it was 22.
Okay, so you're 22 at the time.
Yeah.
Then. Tell me what you did, brother. I know what you did, but you can tell all of our thousands of listeners.
I think this must actually be, this is 2009, so actually it was 2006 when I went out to the States. So 2009, recession was kind of at its worst. Came home, moved back in with my parents, and then pretty quickly landed work in Dublin, which I thought was the light. You know, it was amazing to get work at that time.
Right.
€10 an hour, I felt like I had made it, moved up to Dublin. I was working in a power plate gym, so that's the machine you stand on and it shakes.
What? Go on.
I was grateful to have work. I was excited to move to Dublin, kind of try and make a name for myself and everything else. But ultimately got fired from that gym for telling people what I thought of.
Right, okay. Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Just one of those, you establish a rapport with people, you're not going to appreciate them. And I was excited, even after getting fired, I was excited. I said, look, I'm going to go out on my own and give this a go. And I started painting a picture on social media of growing a successful business. I'd contacted all the models in Dublin, knowing that if I trained the models, I'd get some press. So
I trained
the models for free, but I didn't actually have any paying clients. So if you can imagine, I'm in Dublin putting on this facade, actually working full-time in a clothes shop, which I didn't tell anyone at home.
Right, right.
Friends back home are seeing pictures of me with models every day of the week, kind of an illusion of building a business online. And I never come home on the weekends because they think I'm probably partying with models, but really I'm just working in the clothes shop.
Yeah.
Just stubborn and young, and I've always been a dreamer. So I had talked a big game up to that point, but I hadn't done the work and
right.
I wasn't willing to come home having failed. Ultimately, as you know, Christmas Eve, I worked in the clothes shop till about 2. Dad rang me up and kind of asked when I was coming home. And I had to swallow my pride, I suppose, and ask him for a loan of money to get the bus home, which was hard to do. You don't want to go back to your family looking for help at that age, whatever, 24 by this time, because I kind of struggled by for a year. And I cried like a child coming home on the bus for 3 hours. Bus where, like, you know, half the people on the bus going home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Just felt like felt horrible. The being financially broke is one thing, but being broken and failing with everything you thought you were going to do is another. So came home, got work in a pizza place, moved back in with my parents, and was just lost really as to what I was going to do next.
You tell a story about also your mum's birthday was on what day was it?
Yeah, mum's birthday is Christmas Day, so I came home for Christmas Eve. I wrote her a card on Christmas. I was crying writing the card saying, I'll take you to lunch when things get better. My brother was 11. He had more money in the bank than me. So it was just miserable. And, you know, look, I was lucky. I was very lucky to have a family to go back to and to have a lot, you know, relative to what a lot of people have. But just the feeling of failure really was the hardest thing for me. And again, being an ambitious young guy who, I think anyone in the fitness industry is quite driven and hungry. And sometimes that can make the perceived failure a lot worse than.
So where was your head at this time, Pat? We'll come up to how our paths crossed, but were you seriously considering jacking it all in at this time?
Yeah, I was lost. I'd walk up down the beach, live by the beach, so I'd be up and down the beach for a couple hours a day, just kind of looking for a light at the end of the tunnel and crying until, you know, if I bumped into anyone I knew, I'd wipe away the tears and kind of pretend things were better. But yeah, I was lost. I didn't know. I just couldn't see any light at the end of the tunnel, and everything looked bleak.
How old were you at the time now, buddy?
24, I think, at this point. Yeah, 24 at this point. So it was everything. I talk about the stories we tell ourselves. I was back working in this pizza place in town as a waiter, and I felt, you know, people I had grown up with would come into restaurants and they'd be laughing, and not laughing at me, but I felt like they were laughing at me. So they'd be out for a meal. And of course, when you go out for a meal, you're having fun, you're laughing and stuff like that. But my world view was that I was below all these people now, and that they were laughing at me maybe because I'm back in the restaurant and I'd failed. And, you know, that's...
Yeah, so you've got all these kind of dark thoughts consuming you. And I've been there, mate. I think we all been there, you know? And, you know, I can imagine the sort of place you're in. So, okay, so look. And guys, this is where sort of things take a real change now. I mean, I really wanted to digest sort of what Pat sort of said here in these last sort of 15 minutes. Like, this guy was in a serious dark place. And, you know, what he's done now with the rest of his life is incredible. And we'll switch tracks now and get a little bit more upbeat, because the story from there is sensational. So Pat, what happened next?
So my dad said to me, look, I'm happy to help you. If you keep working for a couple of months and save as much money as you can, I'll help you out in terms of going back to university and maybe studying physiotherapy. He's always been big on education. He's always been a big supporter. So he was saying to me, like, you know, there's no future in personal training. You're not going to make a living doing that. You've seen that. I've told you that for years, and now it's failed. So that's the proof. But physiotherapy, you get to work with people, you get to, you know, see people in that capacity, and you get to help people in a similar capacity, and you're guaranteed work wherever you go. So I said, yeah, that all makes sense. I applied to go back and do physiotherapy, and I got accepted. So this was kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel. And then a couple of days later, we got a phone call saying the course had been cancelled. So I was like, okay, back to square one. And it just, something prompted me. I said, look, I'm just going to try this personal training thing one last time. I had this belief that, I suppose, I read in books that, you know, if someone has been successful at something, they might not go to that person and figure out what they're doing. So I said, look, I'm going to try this one more time. Granted, I've failed, but there are people that I can see on social media, like yourself, Paul Mort, Dax Moy. There was a lot of guys I was following on social media from afar. And part of me was saying, how are they able to do it? And the other part, you know, I suppose the humble bit that came out was, right, I'm going to go and ask them how they're doing it. So I messaged some of you guys. You got back to me quickly, and you didn't know me at all. We just connected on Facebook and stuff like that. 30 Plus was really taking off at that time. I know you were mentoring with some of the guys out in the States. And I think I just messaged asking for a couple of tips, and you said, fire me on your number, buddy. I'll give you a shout. And as I've told you, I was kind of taken aback by the fact someone was ringing me long distance from Wales, and I thought, this guy must be minted.
He's minted. He's calling you off Skype.
Was it Skype?
Yeah. But do you know what, mate? I know you spoke about this at TEDx, but I remember getting that email from you, and it's funny because I'll sort of tell you where I was at the time. Like, I was probably about 31 at the time when you reached out to me. I was single. My business was really on the up. I was just living that life, Pat. I was like, had my own sort of bachelor's pad in the bay. I was dating every weekend. And I think when you sent me that email, I was actually at a young lady's house, and it was the morning there, and I think I got up, and I had a spring in my step, had my coffee, and I was just like, yeah, dude, let's just talk. And I was like, literally, I was buzzing. I remember when we started to speak, and I could tell that you were sort of lost. You needed a bit of a kick up the bum. But I think what I really told you was, and I know we're going to get into the mindset stuff in a second, but I had read a book called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne, which had changed my life. And it was about the law of attraction and visualization, focusing your thoughts on what you want rather than what you don't want. Because, you know, your thoughts are, that's what you're doing. Every waking moment is your thinking, you know, every waking moment. So it was about taking your negative thoughts, trying to get rid of them and focus on being more positive, because we've all got an imagination, right? So if we can think big in our head, it doesn't, you know, we're not hurting anyone, right? So there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And I think I told you, first off, you need to start to visualize and focus on what it is you actually want. But then I also give you some practical advice. I think I said to you, look, just go out and get amongst it. Like, get some flyers done. Go and get in the hairdressing salons. Go to the tanning salons. Go to the clothes shops and just talk, go and meet people, go and bang doors almost. Because I remember when I got into the industry, I got myself 5,000 flyers done. I've actually still got one of them on my office, on my desk in front of me now, just to remind me of where it all started. And I just went banging doors. I was just putting flyers through doors, knocking on doors, talking to people. And I ended up getting a good bunch of clients initially that virtually paid my wages for the first year of being a personal trainer. So I think that was pretty much what I gave you, wasn't it? I give you a bit of a pep talk, but as well as sort of the mindset stuff, I gave you those practical steps to take away and go and do.
Yeah, it was just a little nudge. And obviously, TEDx, I talked about that, the whole idea that one conversation could change everything.
Yep.
We never know what's going on in other people's lives. So you didn't know, you might have known I was in a, you know, funk, but you didn't know how low I was.
Sure.
I recognized then, you know, I got empathy for people, I suppose, through that experience myself, and that when I was in Dublin, I thought fitness with push-ups and broccoli and counting reps and all this kind of stuff. That's all I saw as fitness being. But then you hit this low point yourself and you start to see, well, wow, if one person can give me a nudge and make me feel a bit better about myself, what if I could do that every day as a profession? And, you know, I look back to my teen years and fitness gave me confidence. So then you put all these things together and it's funny how life lines up. Then I look back to Eric that had passed away, you know, because he didn't believe in himself up in America. And what could have happened to him if he had a bit more belief. So all these things start to emerge and it's okay. Let's put the belief together with the confidence that comes from fitness, together with a little nudge, together with a bit of positivity, together with a bit of... And see what happens. I didn't realize all this at the time, but it was just kind of perfect storm, I suppose. So like you said, I got 5,000 flyers as well. I dropped them everywhere. I went to hairdressers everywhere, boom, anywhere that women would speak. I remember that being a strategy you were implementing, and it made a lot of sense. And on a side note, any trainers listening, it's probably something that's much needed now because everyone's obsessed with Facebook ads and all this kind of thing, but you need to get out and meet people.
Just getting out there in front of people in any line of work. Just get in front of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Be the local hero.
So go on. Sorry, bud.
No, you're good. So drop the 5,000 flyers, advertise a little boot camp on my local beach back in May 2012. And the first morning I had 5 clients, which was just, you know, a massive confidence boost for me. And to other people, it might have been a failure and they might have packed it in. But I said, look, I'm just going to build upon this. I'm going to be the best part of these people's day and I'm going to stay consistent. And if I can blow 5 people away, they'll each bring 2 or 3 people next month and it won't take long for this to grow. And that's ultimately what happened. Within 3 months, there was 100 people.
What? So hang on, rewind. You went from 5 people to 100 in 3 months.
Yeah, it was magic. I was doing so much. I mean, one thing I suppose you realize is that the work that you do today isn't really going to manifest for a couple of months. So when I started with my 5 clients, I would train them in the morning and then the whole day was spent either working on content or working on free stuff for them or working on free media I'd put up online, working on posters for local shops.
Yeah.
I did a lot. I'd write articles for anyone to take them. And then it just felt like 3 months in, everything was starting to land. Boom. So
you're like planting seeds almost, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously, there's a gestation period. The seed doesn't just come up overnight. So you have to have faith and water the plant every day. But 3 months in, you know, I had a girl come to the class. She said, okay, I'm just moved back from, actually, what was she on? Desperate Scousewives or one of these shows. She said, I just moved back to Galway. I'd never heard of you. I went into town. I saw a healthy menu in a restaurant with your name on it. Then I went across to the health shop to buy some fish oil. Your poster's there. Then I went into the local shop, bought the newspaper. You've got an article in there. I can't get away from you. I'm just going to train with you.
Yeah, love it.
It was that idea of top of mind awareness, just be everywhere.
Yeah, and this is what's really interesting. It's like nobody gave you permission, right? You just had to make a decision. There's hundreds of personal trainers around, hundreds of people that could have put on a boot camp, but you just went out there and did the fucking work, man. And it's like people just make excuses. I say this to my coaches or the franchisees. Look, you're going to find a way or you're going to find an excuse. It's as simple as fucking that, right? And I know I'm swearing, guys, I'll get super passionate about this. But Pat, literally, I fired him up because that's what I do. I like to fire people up. But he went away and did the work. He went away and did what I told him. He got those 5,000 flyers done. He got in people's faces. That's what he did. He did the work, right? And like you said, I love that what you said about just planting those seeds and watering them every day. And also, Pat, you said that those five people, you're going to make sure that you are the highlight of their day. And I tell this to all of my coaches, and the guys listening to this might resonate, right? We've got three places in life. The first one is home. That can be stressful, okay? And I'll give you an example. I'm locked in my office doing this podcast, guys, because my youngest son is downstairs, and he will come in here and ruin that, right? He will come in here and go mad. So I'm locked in my office, and he actually thinks I've gone to the gym, so he doesn't come upstairs, right? So home life is stressful. Trying to work from home can be stressful. We have bills. We have everything going on in our lives, right? Then we've got the workplace. Can be stressful. You might do a job that you don't enjoy. It can be stressful. So what's our third space? Our third space is our gym, our boot camp, our CrossFit class, whatever it is, okay? And we go there to relieve our stresses. We look forward to that all day. And I say to my coaches, you better damn well put on a show. You better give them an experience, because it's not just a fitness class. These guys are coming for a fucking release. That sounds a bit annoying. These guys are coming for release, right? They are coming to get rid of all their stresses. They're coming to forget what's going on in the workplace, to forget their stresses at home. And if we can be the highlight of their day, of course they're going to go away and tell people about it, right?
Yeah, it was the simple idea that the lady training in the fitness class maybe hasn't been acknowledged by her partner or by her workplace in a long time. And just giving the simple couple of words of encouragement is going to put a pep in her step. It's going to leave her going home as better wife, better mother, better employee, better whatever her roles are. And, you know, people notice these things.
Yeah. So you got to 100 on the beach, right? But wasn't there an interesting story of the police turning up when you were taking a class, Mr. Davili? What happened there?
Yeah, so I'm down there on a Monday morning after the weekend, and teach a 9:45 class, which is like the busy moms. They've dropped the kids to school, they're down, social, having a laugh, everything else. Police came down in the middle of a session and asked if I was Pat. I said, I am. They said, we've heard about you. We're coming back at 10:30. Don't go anywhere. So for the rest of the class, I'm kind of sweating, wondering what's going on. The ladies in the class are gossiping, wondering what's going on. And they come back down after class and put down the window of the car. They said, lock up your bike. You're going to have to come with us for a bit. And I turn around to get the bike, and I'm just wondering what's happening. I figure, like, everything's been going so well.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn now. And as I turn to pick up the bike, they start cracking up laughing. And they said, we have a fat fella here in the back, needs to get in shape. Will you look after him? So started training some of them. Yeah, it was just, look, those couple of months were magic. It was just such a community being built, and we were, you know, a big part of obviously changing who you are comes down to changing your environment. Yeah. So a lot of the clients saw great results because not only were they training together, they were starting to socialize together.
Community.
Rather than going out on a Saturday night, they were going for a run on a Sunday morning and getting brunch and
boom.
Really living, you know.
And this is what it's about, you know. You just said community, dude. That's where it all starts. And you know what? It makes me so grateful and proud when I look at social media and all of our clients, whether it be the male clients, the lady client, they're meeting up, they're doing stuff outside of boot camp, and they're going for, like you said, they're meeting up, they're going for a long run on the Sunday. They're meeting up for brunch. There's groups of girls and groups of guys, like, getting together for each other's birthday. And it all started just because we brought those people together. And, you know, even along the way, I've had many ups and downs, and even my downs with a couple of my friends going off and setting up their own thing, and a couple of people ripping me off and trying to set up their own thing. I still try and take a positive spin on it and think, well, all those guys, all those friendships were still formed because, you know, 30 plus was what brought them together and gave them that sense of community in the first place, you know. And it really does, mate. It all starts with bringing those people together and forming an amazing community, right?
Yeah, the environment is stronger than ever. So when you step into an environment that encourages your growth, you'll grow. If you rely on power alone, it won't happen.
Yeah. So, okay, dude. So this was all going well, and then you decided to set up a gym, right?
Yeah, it was a year to the day that I started on the beach. I opened my gym. So that was kind of the dream from the time I was 12. At the same time, I brought out my first book. So that was released with an Irish publisher and became the best-selling book in Ireland in fitness that year.
Whoa. So you released a book. How did that come about, my friend?
At this time, I think I had 20,000 followers on Facebook. So I'd been given a lot of good value on Facebook, a lot of free downloads and stuff that had built my following. Also getting a lot of good before and afters, which was attracting people. And I just posted on Facebook saying I'd finished the book and would anyone know a publisher that might be interested. And the reality was I hadn't started a book. I just thought I'd put it out there. You talk things into existence sometimes. And I got a meeting with a publisher and he said, I'm interested. When's it going to be done? And I said, I've just a few photos to take. And then I just put the head down for 3 weeks and I got a health and fitness guide written. And the purpose of the book was just take all the minefield of information that's there and make it very straightforward and practical for people.
Amazing, so, yeah. And it was a 21-day sort of kickstart. That was what was that? Is that what it's called?
21-day jumpstart.
So jumpstart.
Just broke down training, nutrition, and mindset. Here's all you need to know, and here's how you apply it. Day 1 to 21, meal planners, recipes, workouts from home, and a couple of mindset exercises. So it took away all the fluff. It took away all the noise, and made it simple.
Keep it simple. I mean, I said to you recently, like when I went away to put on to learn with Dax. I know you studied with Dax as well. I was in Thailand. I filmed really simple. I think it was 16 bodyweight workouts that can be used over a 21 or 28 day program. Really, really simple stuff. And it was funny because I was filming it. I was getting this self-doubt and Dax pulled me aside. He's like, you don't seem confident. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm based out of a CrossFit gym. I'm surrounded by these athletes doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I think they're going to look at this and think, oh, this is way too easy. And he said, hang on, who's your market? And I said, oh, busy over 30s men that want to get off the couch. They haven't done anything in years. They've got a beer belly. They feel like crap. And he was like, well, listen, don't worry about what the guys in your gym think. This isn't for them. This is for who you've just explained, right? So tunnel vision, focus on your client, and just keep it very simple and very accessible to them. And it was a great bit of advice because I blocked out sort of all the negative thoughts in my head or what people think of me. And I just focused on serving my niche. And those 21, 28-day workouts, we still sell them today as part of our sort of starter fat loss programs, get you off the couch programs, whatever you want to call them. And they're so simple. And I think sometimes the most simple things is the thing that works, right? People are, how can I say, they're consumed by social media and this quick fix sort of thing. But, you know, if we can give them a very, very easy to apply, simple solution, very applicable, then that works, right? And that's what the 21-day jumpstart was all about.
Yeah, I see it myself even now, and I see it with other trainers, that the more we know about nutrition and training, both for ourselves and for our clients, it can paralyze us.
Yeah.
So I know for myself, you know, I used to just go and lift weights and get progressively stronger and then, you know, and then get progressively bigger. And then the more I learned, the more I started questioning everything. I was like, oh, maybe I can't train this today because I did it yesterday. And you overthink everything.
Yep.
And so the last couple of months, I've hired a triathlon coach and she just does the programming for me. And I don't have to think. She does the thinking for me.
Yep.
Because I just found I was doing nothing because I was paralyzed by all this information and complexity.
Yep.
So
yep.
The secret is secrets in simplicity.
Yep.
Same thing with clients. You're better off getting a client to go and do 5K run a couple of times a week than, you know, try to bombard them with a million different things they need to think about.
Yeah. Okay, so you got the book out. That was a huge success. And you opened the gym. So tell me, it was a lifelong ambition. But, you know, everything was going so well. You had 100 people on the beach. Why did you, what was forcing you or dragging you towards opening this gym, buddy?
So I had my 100 on the beach. And then I ran three other locations in Galway. So I was working out at two different martial arts studios. I had 60, 70 people in each of those. And then I had another outdoor camp somewhere else. So I was running all over the place.
Sure.
And it just got to the point where I was paying rent in different facilities to use them. And it made more sense to have my own place and just have an office and stuff like that. So just something I wanted to do. And it was a natural progression. And as you know, I'd say similar to yourselves, it was kind of, right, we started with bodyweight training, we integrated kettlebells and resistance bands, and now the clients were at the point where they needed to start working with some barbells and dumbbells.
Sure.
Not needed to, but it was a natural progression. So, and the gym was magic, took on some staff, we started bringing teams to Tough Mudder and stuff like that. So we brought the biggest team ever to Tough Mudder. We brought 550 people, raised $250,000 for charity doing that.
Wow.
And I did that for a couple of years, ran online courses, became a big thing then because there was people outside of Galway saying, look, my cousin trains between Galway, she's seen great results, how do I get involved? And I think I was kind of the first or one of the first in Ireland to be doing the online courses. And that just really scaled quickly. And it got to the point then when the gym didn't make sense anymore. So I closed the gym about 2 years ago, right. Sold it on, and I've been solely online since.
Fantastic. So you got the gym. You got the gym out of your system. It was a great 2 years, right? You sold it on.
Yeah.
Is that still going now with somebody else?
Yeah, it's been passed on now again. So it's had two owners since. That was an interesting one in terms of identity. So I think a lot of people on the call might resonate with this, that I had achieved something I'd always wanted. But I didn't want it anymore. So I had it for a while, but it didn't feel right anymore. But that was my identity. I was the fitness guy. I was the gym owner. I was the local business story. I was all these things. And I knew that for me to evolve and to step to the next level, I had to step away from that identity.
Yeah.
That's scary because that's in conflict to what you believe, because everything you believe yourself to be is what has gotten you to where you are now. So for me at that point, I'm a gym owner. I'm a local business success story. I'm a whatever else. That's who I was. But who I wanted to be was, a world traveler, an explorer,
right.
An adventurer, a businessman, more than a local success story. And I recognized that, look, I got to let go of some things if I want to move forward. So close the gym. And
sure. That
came with fears that, you know, people locally would think I was getting big for my boots, or people would feel I was deserting them, or it was all these stories, but that's always going to be the way. And I wanted to pursue motivational speaking and personal development, and that's something I've done obviously since. So
let me just stop you there, because you've mentioned to me in the past, and when I met you, you did strike me as a little bit shy. And so you've become this success. You know, only two or three years earlier, you were lost, like you said, at Christmas. You couldn't afford to take your mum out. And now, you know, you've blown up online. You've got all these followers on Facebook. You're the local celebrity. The gym's going well. You could have just gone, hey, this is great, right? But you wanted to test yourself and challenge yourself, make yourself uncomfortable and get into this motivational speaking, even though you've told me you're a shy lad. What was that like, dude?
it was terrifying. The first couple of talks I got a couple of talks back home for being the local success story. People wanted me to come in and share the story. So started doing them, and it petrified me, but it was something that, you know, I often feel like the things that scare you are just a signal to lean into them.
Yeah.
So I did a few, then I decided I wanted to get good at speaking. So I did 100 talks in a year for free.
Wow.
Up and down the country whilst running the gym, whilst releasing the book and doing the book tour. And that was just, you know, get 1% better every talk and I'll be doing well.
Wow. So dude, how did you line up all these talks? Like, what did you do, man? Because how did you get the inroads to do all these talks? It's fascinating.
I would talk anywhere. I spoke in schools, nursing homes, colleges, small businesses, big businesses, clubs, wheelchair basketball clubs, anywhere. I would just contact them, say, I'd speak about nutrition, training, and mindset. I'd love to come in and do a talk. If you can get a few people, I'm there.
Amazing.
And I would just drive up and down the country. And I shot for 100, I think I did just under 80. And
they were all free, Pat, yeah?
All free.
Brilliant.
The biggest ones had about 400 people. The smallest ones had 4 people. 3 of them would have been drunk. So there was every type of... I turned up at one lady's house and it was supposed to be a gym and it was just her shed with all of her friends around the place. And
what?
Yeah, there was everything.
That's amazing. And you know what I love, guys? Listen to this. Like, again, he went out and made these opportunities. This is what, and you've really inspired me just listening to you on this call, Pat, already. Like, you know, we're great friends anyway, but just listening to how you created your own opportunities. And I was saying this to somebody yesterday, like, you know, if opportunity doesn't knock, then build a door and go and knock it yourself. And that's basically what Pat did. Like, nobody was going to give him permission to go and do this. He decided and he just went and did it. And if you think about it, if you want to make a change in your career, don't care how old you are, guys, and you know, where you're at in your life, like, you can go and make a change. You can go and create those opportunities. Like, take an hour away from social media, that hour that you're spending on it, and go and think about what it is you want to do. Like, do you want a career change? Do you want to set up a little side business? Could you turn a hobby into a passion? There's never been a better time to do that. There is opportunity everywhere, and it might not seem that, but you've got to go after it and you've got to look for it. And that's exactly what you did, right, Pat?
Yeah, you talk about permission. I mean, I had guys that would have trained me in my teens that, you know, are involved in fitness or martial arts that took offense to the fact that I was putting myself out there as much as I was, you know, was, and they got upset by it, and they told me that, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years and you shouldn't have more of a profile than me. And I just had to make the call. Look, I'm not going to slow down my progress and slow down because of your fears.
I love it.
I don't want to step in anyone's toes. Well, I don't care. I'm not stepping on your toes. It's up to you to keep moving. If you don't keep moving, I'm going to keep going, you know?
So did you find that sort of people would talk about you and you get some negative posts on Facebook for what you're doing and, oh, Pat's this, Pat's that?
Oh, yeah, loads. And I mean, look, that bothered me at first. It was in one ear and not the other for the last couple of years. But at first it did, because I grew this thing and everything was very positive and people were happy for me and everything else. And then the negativity starts coming. Mm. And, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I'm just trying to give it a go here. Like, why are you coming after me, kind of thing? But I recognize it now. People are in pain.
Yeah.
And it's easier for them to take out their frustrations on you.
Absolutely.
You know, I talk about the mirror thing, that the world is a mirror. The things that we see in other people that we like, it's a reflection of what we've got, but we just need to do it more. The things we see we don't like is also a reflection of us. So, you know, I think people got triggered and got pissed off by the fact that I was so willing to go out there and do the work and put myself out there and be unafraid. And it's a big thing in the fitness industry that everyone's afraid to put content out, put themselves out there, because what if other trainers don't like me? The other trainers are never going to be paying you. So, you know, there's hundreds of trainers in Ireland alone that are probably a lot better than me, but their unwillingness to put themselves out there is stopping thousands of people from getting help.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I actually, I saw one of your posts on Instagram yesterday, and I was with one of my coaches at the time. We were just about to run the half marathon. I said, hey, read this. And you put a post up with a meme and or whatever. It said, the greatest fear in the world is the opinion of others. And at the moment you are unafraid of the crowd. And at the moment you're unafraid of the crowd, you are no longer a sheep. You become a lion. And a great roar arises in your heart. It's the roar of freedom. And it was by a guy called Osho. And I think it's perfect. You know, like people are paralyzed by fear of what other people think of them. You know, and it stops you in your tracks. It stops you from progressing in life. And I think that if you'd have got consumed with what people have thought about you, you wouldn't be where you are now, right?
Yeah. And look back, there was times where I was concerned. One of the interesting things I was talking to someone about was that when I started doing my thing, I just did it for myself. And I took all the things I knew. So I'd learned things in my martial arts. I'd learned things in America. I'd learned things in my training course. And that was what I put out there, and I put my personality and all that. Once I got a following, there was a time where I started questioning myself, and I was kind of like, okay, well, now I'm the fitness guy, and now people know me for this. How am I supposed to act? Am I supposed to start wearing tank tops, even though I don't like tank tops?
Yeah.
I said, you know, all this kind of self-doubt comes up, because there's a bit of imposter syndrome, you know, when you start, because so few people put themselves out there, truly put themselves out there, and go do 100 talks, go write 100 articles, go do 100 podcasts, whatever it is. That when you do that, you get a bit of profile, and suddenly you start saying, well, maybe I don't deserve to be here. How did I get here? Imposter syndrome, you know, I'm not like other people that are in the spotlight or whatever. That comes up, and for me, you know, I was insecure, and I definitely altered who I was to a certain degree for a while to try to fit the stereotypes of what I thought it should be.
Sure.
But again, I've worked through that, and working through that for myself has helped me work, you know, allow other people to do the same. So it's been good.
So you did the 100 talks, and then on the back of that, you started to actually put on some pretty big sort of paid stuff, right? Which almost brings us up to the present day. So tell us about the last couple of years, because we're going to sort of talk about the mindset and the work that you've done on yourself, because now you do talks, and it's not really about fitness, right? It's about chasing your dreams, it's motivational, it's about changing your careers or reconnecting with yourself, etc., etc. I'll let you take it on, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So the time when I discovered fitness at 12 and 13 was also the time that I was discovering the personal development industry. I was looking at guys like Tony Robbins, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie, all the familiar faces in that world. I loved the books. I remember a friend kind of jokingly saying to me, if they were that good, you'd only read one and you'd be successful. But in retrospect, I was reading the books, but I wasn't really applying. So when I hit my low point, the time when I, you know, got the call from you, I was also dipping into these books again and kind of said to myself, look, if the way I'm living life is not working, it would make sense to figure out what does work. And I got a lot of value from those books. I ultimately ended up going to Tony Robbins in New York.
Wow. How was that?
It was great. It was a good experience. It was cool. It was different. No more than anything else, it's up to you to do the work. So there were 7,000 people in that room. I would imagine 80% of the room maybe didn't make that much change. Minimum, because that's the nature of these events. But he said something at the time, I think it was about 5 minutes in the room, and he said that when you start, this is what I took from it anyway. Okay. My friends that were there with me don't remember him saying this, but this is what I heard.
Okay.
He said, when you start something, you go for it, and you're willing to, you know, just have fun and be yourself and put yourself out there and do it your way and everything else. Once you attain something, you become fearful because you're afraid you're going to lose what you have. And you start playing it safe and you stop doing all those things that got you to where you were. And I resonated with that in the sense that I had built my gym and my fitness business based off of being myself and having fun and everything else. And I had seen all this growth in myself, but I had plateaued because now I was fearful that I could lose my gym, that I could lose this profile that I had built for myself, that I could lose all this validation that I had. And I recognized, I suppose, that I was putting too much onus on my accomplishments and not enough credit on myself. And I just saw that I needed to step up. So I made the decision there and then that I was closing the gym, that I was going to be the Tony Robbins of Ireland.
I love it.
And yeah, I came home, closed the gym and booked my first big talk, which was, I think ultimately 150 people came for a full day workshop, and it was magic. And I think I cried that day on stage and kind of said, this is what I want to do. And I appreciate you being here. So that's what I've been doing since.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit, buddy, about some of the stuff that you're doing. You've got the thing called Camp Reconnect. You're doing one-day talks, two-day seminars, etc. Tell us a little bit about them and how they work, buddy.
So I do one-day events. Obviously, I do a lot of corporate speaking as well, which has been cool because what I like about that is I didn't have to change anything about who I was. I didn't have to become the corporate guy. I don't have to wear a suit. I don't have to tailor things exactly the way that they want it. I've just been myself every step of the way, and it's cool. It's nice. It feels a lot better when you've got big corporates that want you to come in and speak from the heart rather than just give them some scripted stuff that, you know. So, but yeah, so I do the corporate stuff, which is generally an hour or two, and that's just about kind of waking people up to the fact that you're here once. You need to climb the right mountain. So a lot of people climb the mountain of success to impress other people. So they're looking for external validation. They're looking for their parents or their friends or their partner or someone else to tell them that, oh, you've climbed that mountain, now you're good enough. Ultimately, that's never going to be enough because everyone in the world can tell you you're beautiful or you're strong or you're pretty or whatever it is. But if you don't believe it yourself, you're not going to believe it. So, you know, rewinding back to when I did my martial arts and weight training as a teen, it was something for me that internally motivated me. So that made me feel like I was good enough. If I had played rugby and the other sports that everyone else was playing and everyone thought I was great at those, I still would have felt a bit empty because it wasn't for me. So ultimately, the 1 to 2 hour talks are just trying to touch on those concepts. The day workshop is going a little bit further. So kind of identifying what are the stories that are running your life. So we've all got stories that keep us stuck. We've got stories that empower us and stories that disempower us. So I look at ways of overcoming the stories, ways of identifying the stories, and ways of reframing where you currently are and identifying where you want to go for you, again, for you as opposed to for anyone else. And the onus there is that, you know, there's a couple of different key areas of life. If we water the plant in each of those areas every day, your life transforms pretty quickly. And, you know, that's what I've done the last couple of years. Nothing was overnight, but it seemed like overnight success because they just tipped away consistently.
Okay, so give me an example of that, Pat. So what areas of your life do you water every day? And what can we pass on to the guys to help them? Give us something that you've done for yourself and some applicable tips for the lads.
Well, say for health, I see a lot of trainers that seem to have had similar, that like when you open a gym and you're doing the long hours in the gym and you're doing all the travel, all that kind of stuff, you sometimes lose the passion that you had for your own fitness, which was definitely like one of the things that happened to me, and it was a contributing factor to me closing the gym. I felt like, look, I'm not doing the work the way I used to. I don't love training the way I used to. It doesn't make sense for me to be doing this for other people. I'm telling people to live their dreams. This is not my dream anymore. But getting back into fitness, getting more consistent, I suppose, with fitness the last couple of months, one of the things has just been simplifying, has been one of my things. So like I said earlier, we can make things complex, but complexity is the enemy of action, I would say. So one of my things is just I train every day. It doesn't matter what it is, I just train. So after this call, I've got jiu-jitsu. Yep. I've got loads of stuff on today, but jiu-jitsu needs to be non-negotiable. Tomorrow I'll swim, the next day I'll run. There's something every day, and I don't overcomplicate it, because again, complexity is just going to leave me debating whether what I should do, and that time spent debating could be spent training. So for my health, I'll just train every day, do something. For my business, I'll have an outcome every day, so we can get caught working 24/7 and never get anything done, because we don't have targets. But if I have a specific target each day, then I know I've won every day. In terms of like looking after myself, something I do is I write for 20 minutes a day, just get my thoughts on paper to get them out of my head. And the idea there as well is to kind of trust your inner voice. That for years I read everyone else's books and I quoted everyone else when I did seminars. But in a way that kind of negates your own voice, and it kind of tells you subconsciously you're not good enough, because you need to go to everyone else for the answers. So I ask myself questions and I write the answers down. What else do I do?
Is that part of the daily journaling, Pat, we were talking about before?
Yeah, journaling's become a massive thing for me the last couple of years, and particularly the last year, I would say that, again, I went through a phase where I was trying to go to 2, 3, 4 books a week, and I was powering through them when I was reading everything, and it definitely helped. You know, you definitely need to learn from other people and fast track the learning curve by reading from other people. But equally, I told you I'm doing a bit of mentoring with Gary J. White's Warrior book.
Yes.
He had a good little concept there on study, and he said the way he does his study is that he'll read a book. He doesn't set out to do a certain amount of time. He just tries to get a revelation. So if he reads a book and he has one page of the book read and the revelation he needs comes up, puts the book down, and then he writes about how it applies to him.
Right.
So imagine, you know, applying something every day for a month from different books you were reading, or one book even, as opposed to reading 30 books and applying nothing. Obviously, one is going to change you, the other is not. Those are some of the things I do consistently. So I focus on and relationships. You know, I've gotten into the habit now of just sending texts every morning, a couple of texts to different people that I care about. I've just got a small handful of close friends.
I like that.
And, again, just watering the plant, because, you know, when you're busy, it's easy for your relationships to suffer, because you've got stories in your head that, oh, it's okay, because you justify it to yourself why you haven't made the effort with people. But the reality is, if you haven't texted or contacted your friends in a couple of months, you can have all the stories in the world, but the reality is you're not being a very good friend or family member, you know?
Sure. You also spoke something, we spoke about a fortnight ago, and you spoke, you like to journal because you can write down the times recently when you're at your happiest and how you can recreate that. And you actually said to me, off the cuff, tell me, when you're at your happiest? And it was funny because I said, you said, imagine yourself at your happiest. When was that recently? And I said, it was down on Barry Island seafront with the kids. They were on their scooters and me and Sarah were walking up and down, getting our steps in. And then we just sat and had fish and chips over on the seafront. And it was great. And you went, how simple was that, right? I bet it didn't cost you much. And I was like, no, it just cost me the fish and chips and had some great experiences with the kids, which they'll remember and we remember.
Yeah.
And you talk about how easy that would be to actually recreate that. Yet we're so caught up having this busy life running around like a busy fool that we forget to make those simple experiences which will just live with us forever.
Yeah, so I think one thing for people to consider is, obviously we talk about the why, what is your why, or all these kind of, you hear it all the time, what is your why? But if people consider, okay, what is the goal? What is the thing I'm going after? So, okay, I want to run a marathon. What's the feeling that that's going to give you? Because ultimately that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So the feeling it's going to give me, it's going to make me confident. It's going to make me feel energetic. It's going to make me feel fit. It's going to make me feel healthy. It's going to make me feel sexy, whatever it is. If you're going to do a 12-week training plan for a marathon and be miserable for 12 weeks, then ultimately you're probably not going to feel that great on the day itself. You're not going to magically feel all those things. So it starts to become, okay, those are the feelings you want. How can you bring them into your life a bit quicker? Yeah, as part of the plan.
Yes.
And the idea with the happiness exercises, I got it from my friend Philip. If you can identify three of the happiest days you've had in the last number of months, you'll probably find that it's not what you think. It's not a Ferrari, it's not a Lamborghini, it's not a Rolex, it's not Louis Vuittons, whatever those things are. It's the connections you have. Yeah. It's very simple things, but then I see it in retreats. You know, in our retreats, we do things like salsa dancing, we do things like art classes, we have kind of different adventures.
Amazing.
People can pick what they want to do.
Yeah.
But we'll have clients come up and they'll just say, I've had my breakthrough. And it's like, I just need to go back doing salsa. And it's so simple.
Yeah.
Like, you know, again, complexity kills us, but simplicity is key. So, I think people's confidence drops because they don't do things for themselves that make them happy or confident. And then they wonder where their confidence is gone. But effectively, they're saying yes to everyone else. Yes, I'll do things for you. And yes, I'll jump through hoops for you. But no, I won't take a half an hour for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, Pat, when we spoke before, you were telling me this great story at one of your recent seminars or talks, that there was a young lady there that had, I'll just prompt your memory and then you can take it over. She was wanting to do something. It was more to actually spite her dad than anything. She was going to go down a road with her career, but you actually talked her out of her. Do you remember that? You were telling me recently?
Yeah, found the idea of climbing the right mountains.
Yeah.
So, I recognize it in myself. I recognize it in a lot of people, is that oftentimes when we set a goal, the goal is really to validate ourselves to other people. So like, okay, I want to do a degree so that my family are proud of me. I want to do, and it's external. And again, the idea that is, everyone else can tell you something that you're great at, but if you don't believe it yourself and if it's not true to you, it doesn't really mean much. So I had a girl at a retreat who wanted to do an MBA, and I started questioning her on it, and she said, you know, I want to do an MBA so I feel academic. And I says, well, why does that matter? She says, well, I didn't really go to, you know, didn't do much academically when I was younger. And why does that matter? Well, the rest of my family did stuff when they were younger. Why does that matter? My dad doesn't think I'm academic. Why does that matter? I want to piss off my dad.
Yeah. You peeled the onion there, dude.
Yeah, I want to prove him wrong. And I says, look, it's going to cost you about 50 grand to do an MBA. It's going to take 3 years. There's easier ways to piss off your dad. And you're not going to feel good at the end of that. And the other thing to consider with that, you know, for her, was maybe that she had built up a story in her head of how she was going to make her dad proud. It could be the furthest thing from the truth, and just the lack of communication would leave it there. Like, one of my things I say is, you know, I had this notion in my head that my dad should show his pride in me by saying, I'm proud of you. And I had this story going that that's how life should be. And I think a lot of people are like this. They think love needs to look a certain way, pride needs to look a certain way, appreciation needs to look a certain way. And when you've got those stories in your head, you're closed off to everything else. So my dad was showing me he was proud of me in a million different ways. But I was obsessed with this idea that he had to say the words.
Right.
So when you've got expectations on other people, ultimately that was very unfair of me to have an expectation on him that he needs to be a certain way for me to feel, you know, accomplished or whatever else. So that's the kind of interesting thing about stories. Again, your story can be empowering or disempowering, but that was definitely disempowering me, was expectations I had on other people. And that comes down to communication. When I communicated effectively with him, I realized that, you know, it's just not how he operates, and he's proud of me in other ways.
Exactly. I like it. So yeah, communication is key. Pat, we're going to talk for about another 10 minutes, if that's all right with you, buddy. And of course, we can't do a podcast with you without talking about you hanging out with Richard Branson, dude. How did all that come about? And again, guys, great. I love this story because, you know, Pat was, like I said, he was working in a pizza restaurant, and 6-7 years later, he's hanging out with Richard Branson. Talk us through it, buddy.
I do. What was that?
How did it all start?
I suppose, you know, talked briefly earlier about the kind of power of environment. We talked about how our clients were trying to facilitate an environment where they can level up. You're the same as me. We go into mastermind groups and work with different coaches coaches and mentors, because ultimately what those people are going to do is show you a new possibility and show you a new worldview and challenge your current stories.
Yeah.
So if you're someone that's never earned more than 50,000 euro and you're the richest person in your social circle, if you step into a room of millionaires, it's going to challenge what you believe about the world, and it's hopefully going to challenge it in a positive way. So with that in mind, I suppose I've always been in mastermind groups, and I joined Yannick Silver's Maverick mastermind group last year.
Yeah. Okay.
So Maverick is, you know, I would encourage everyone to get in some kind of mastermind group. It could be simply going for a coffee with two or three friends that will keep each other accountable once a week.
Yep.
You know, but I've found the paid masterminds, you know, pay to play to a certain degree. Everyone's got to invest for the year.
Yeah.
That makes you value it because you actually show up to the events. You actually take, you know, they could tell you things that you've read 100 times, but when you've paid for the information, you'll probably do it. But anyway, been to a couple of Yannick's events with that and got an invite through that to go out to Necker Island last year for a couple of days.
Wow.
And
this is Richard Branson's island, right? He owns it.
Yeah. Amazing. So we went out there.
How did you feel on the way out?
I mean, I was excited, but to be honest, when I got out there, and I tell this in seminars, when I got out there, there was imposter syndrome came up for me. The same thing I talked about earlier. I said, oh, well, it's all well and good being being well known back home and being a local success story. But here I am with millionaires and billionaires, and not just him, but everyone in the room seems to have a private jet and seems to have their shit together, you know?
Wow.
And I definitely felt a bit of imposter syndrome. And I retracted, you know, I think we can come out of ourselves and we can be our best self where we're inspiring and we're all our positive traits, or equally we can curl up into a shell and be the kind of scared and socially awkward and socially intimidated and socially anxious person. I was like that in that first trip, to be honest.
Right.
But it was something again where I came home and I was like, okay, so I've met one of my heroes. Why did I, and again, it was me in a pen and paper and journal. Why did I, you know, retract like that? And I kind of did a lot of work on that the next couple of months. And then I got to do a triathlon with him probably a couple of months ago. And it was
wow.
A completely different thing. I felt much more comfortable. I was just took him off the pedestal. And one of the big realizations was that when you have people that you admire, it's not them that you admire, it's the traits that they show.
Sure.
So, you know, I thought he was the be all and end all, but the reality was he was just a mirror to me that he's charitable, he's a family man, he's a risk taker.
Yeah.
All the things I want to be, all the things I already am, but I just need to bring out those traits more. That was the lesson I learned from it.
And he's just a normal, cool guy, right?
Yeah. And if he wasn't, you know, I don't care how much money you have, I don't want to hang out with you if you're an ass.
Exactly. No, exactly. And I think that it's great what you say, because we do. We put these people on pedestals, but they're just people that have done the work. They haven't got lucky. You know, I mean, anyone knows Richard Branson's story. He's worked his absolute arse off to get where he is today. he's not a bad person because he's success. Like a lot of people believe that people that are successful are bad people, etc., etc. They might have ripped somebody off to get in that position. He's just a normal guy who's worked his nut off, right?
Yeah. The funny story, I think I was telling you that when we were away at that triathlon, I went down for breakfast really early and he was the only one up. And said, oh, join me for breakfast. And he said, how are you getting on? I said,
wow.
Good. I have no cycling shorts. So I might not be able to have kids after this, but sure, it's a good experience. And he reached into his bag and he said, well, I have spare cycling shorts. And he threw them over to me. And I kind of jokingly said, I hope they're clean. And it was cool. Like I say to people, look, it wasn't a picture on Facebook or that. There wasn't there wasn't other people there, but it was a cool experience.
Yeah.
Went up to him on the last night and said, I got those cycling shorts. I washed them for you. And he's like, oh, I'll just give them back to me next time you're on the island. And I was like, ah, that's cool.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Nice guy.
That's a great story, dude. That's an amazing story. I really like that one. So, okay, buddy, look, we're going to start to wrap up. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, dude. And I hope that you have found this really sort of inspiring. But Pat, you know, before we go, what I want you to do is we're going to talk about another 5 minutes. Give the guys three mindset books or three, you know, self-development books that you would recommend that has really helped you first off, if you could do that. And then I'll ask you the final question, buddy.
Cool. Three mindset books.
Or self-development.
See here, I'm just looking on the bookshelf, trying to get something outside of the norm. Definitely The Strange Secret, Earl Nightingale, which I know you're a fan of as well.
Sorry, buddy?
The Strangest Secret.
Strangest Secret, amazing. Dude, I started listening to it after you recommended it to me again about 2 weeks ago, and some crazy things have happened.
Yeah, some of my groups, I get them to do 30 days listening to it every day for 30 consecutive days. It's yep. 25 minutes of audio. It's well worth it.
Yep.
That would be number one always.
The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. Guys, you can look at it on YouTube now. Do not dismiss this. Listen to it and start to change your thoughts, guys, honestly.
Yeah, really simple but profound. Robin Sharma has a book called The Leader Who Had No Title, which is quite nice. And let's see here. The War of Art actually is quite good. Stephen Pressfield.
Right, okay.
It's about the resistance. So the resistance is the voice that shows up, or the like fear, doubt, self-doubt, procrastination, all these kind of things. He writes it about writer's block. So the idea that the writer gets up in the morning and there's all these things that come up that stop him from writing. Effectively, he just needs to put pen to paper, but it's about doing the work. It's called The War of Art. His stuff is really good. Because we all get that. Look, you sign up to a fitness plan and then Monday comes and you're like, oh, the voice comes up and maybe it says, oh, I didn't get that much sleep last night, so maybe it's better if I don't train, whatever the voice is. But you start to identify that as the resistance.
Yeah.
I need to work through the resistance to get to the results I want.
Yeah. I like it. Okay. So there's three books. Okay. I've just scrolled through before we finish, because I saw another great thing that you posted the other day. We haven't really touched on gratitude, so maybe we can wrap up on that. But you posted something that really resonated with me the other day, and it said the struggle ends when gratitude begins. And I thought, you know what? That right there, what a nugget. The struggle ends when gratitude begins. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago, mate, and at the time I was running around a bit like a busy fool, and I was sort of consumed in my own shit. And I spoke to you and then I went away and I actually started listening to Earl Nightingale, The Strangest Secret again, because, you know, I'll put my hands up. My life's quite chaotic with the kids, et cetera, et cetera. And it's very hard to sometimes just take that time for yourself and start listening to stuff and practicing gratitude again. And so I'm doing these long walks to work where I can listen to podcasts and audiobooks and get my head right. And I started to journal. I started to practice gratitude again and listen to Earl Nightingale. Some crazy things have happened since then. And it is a bit of a miracle, isn't it? But let's just talk a little bit about gratitude, buddy, and how that can change our lives.
Yeah, that was another quote that came out of that particular quote wasn't Tony, but I remember when I went to that event in New York, there was a girl in front of me that sat down and she started crying and she was really angry and she had been designated the wrong seat. So I think she was supposed to get a better seat than what she got or something like this. She's going crazy. Tony gets up on stage and the first thing he starts talking about is expectations and appreciation. So that's where gratitude comes in. He says, when you can trade your expectations for appreciation, your whole world changes. So if you think, I've got expectations on, like I said, my dad to show me he's proud in a certain way. Expectations are going to give a scarcity mindset. I'm only going to see the negative, but appreciation flips everything on its head. But appreciation is gratitude. So, you know, it's very easy, particularly in the social media age that we live in, to look externally and see that everyone else seems to have it together, seems to have everything they ever wanted, seems to have a better body than us, seems to have, you know, everything. Reality is you're just looking outside at what's not working as opposed to what is working. So, you know, my belief is that if you don't practice gratitude for what you have, you can't bring any more into your life.
Yeah.
Because you're in a scarcity mindset. You can be in a love-based mindset where you're trying to produce and create and appreciate, or you can be in a fear-based mindset where you're trying to hold on to everything you've got desperately, where you're trying to take from other people, where you're trying to have expectations on other people, and you're trying to control the world. Gratitude is everything. One simple exercise all of our online clients have done it for the last 5 years is write down three things you're grateful for every day, first thing in the morning, just to put you in that mindset from the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely. Gratitude and appreciation will really change things, guys. And it's very easy to do, right? Everyone wants to be appreciated. And expressing your gratitude does put you in a good vibration for the rest of the day. So go and think about somebody that you appreciate and just tell them. It doesn't have to be the same person every day, but even if you just go and buy a coffee, you know, say hi to the person, ask them how their day's going, thank them, because little things like that, it's like you said, Pat, you know, just that one conversation can change everything. So be grateful. And, you know, before you wake up and think you haven't got anything to be grateful for, trust me, guys, you have. If you've got a roof over your head and you've got clean water to drink and you've got food to eat, then be grateful. Start to appreciate your surroundings and, express gratitude, and you're going to see a lot of changes in your life. Right, Pat, quickly, before we go, give me three applicable things that busy over 30s men can do now to start to make improvements in their life.
Okay, first and foremost, get that Stranger Secrets audio. Yep. And listen to it when you're in the car, so you got no excuse. You're driving to or from work. If you don't drive, do it when you're training. If you can't take 25 minutes in the day for yourself, to be blunt, it means you're not serious. And I know people are busy and everything else, but again, it prioritizes. It's good. Just do it when you're prepping your meals. Yep. Or when you're training. So 25 minutes a day on that will be number one. Number two, I would do 3 acknowledgement texts every morning for the next month, just to see what happens. So
wow.
Send a nice text to 3 people every morning. It won't take more than 5 minutes. And one of the things, it's funny, in the entrepreneurial world, it feels like everyone does voice messages now on Facebook and stuff rather than text, so that's fine too. And just a quick recording, say, look, morning, just want to check in with you. I hope you have a brilliant day. I want you to know I appreciate everything you do for me. I'm looking forward to catching up soon. You know, speak to you soon. As simple as that, 3 a day for the next month. They can be different people. They can be the same people all the time. You can mix it up. That would be my second one. And third one would be, from a work standpoint, because again, it's busy men that are working, I presume, or working on something. Have an outcome every day. Like, what do I want to get done today? What's my main focus today? Because otherwise, if we've no outcome from our work day, you go home to the wife and kids, and you've still got guilt in the back of your head that you haven't done as much work because you've been procrastinating.
Yep.
So when you're, and then you went to work the next day and you've got guilt that you weren't there with your family. So there's this kind of gray area where we're not working or we're not with our family fully. What if we made it black and white? So I work from 9 to 5. Here's my 2 outcomes I want to get done today, or my 1 outcome, or whatever it is. When I go home, I'm actually present and fully engaged with my family. So 1 outcome a day, listen to Earl Nightingale in the car, and 3 acknowledgement texts every day.
I like that a lot, dude. I like that a lot. And I love how you rounded it up, because and it's very hard to strike that balance between business and family. So guys, get your outcome sorted, and then you can be fully present with your family. That's something that I am working on every day myself as well. Pat, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my good friend. I'm going to get the jingles added to this and get this out ASAP. Pat, just quickly before you go, tell us about your next seminar or your next Camp Reconnect and where the guys can jump on and sign up if they want.
Just get me on Facebook, Pat Dibbley, Divilly. My website is under construction at the minute. Camp Reconnect, my 3-day event. It's happening in May. We've got a couple of speakers coming in. We've got surprise activities, fancy dress party, lots of just madness. But it's all about reconnecting with yourself, slowing down, figuring out your game plan, figuring out what your current stories are. And again, just kind of reconnecting with what you love and who you love. Just shoot me a message if I can help anyone with anything. I'd love to. And Tregsy, for you, I just publicly say thank you again for everything you've done for me. Good to see your continued success in family and
thanks, bud. No, listen, mate, it's an absolute pleasure. You're a very dear friend of mine, and I'm so chuffed to see your success as well, mate. But I think there's some great synergy between us. I said to Pat before I started recording this, and I've told you guys anyway in my online communities, I am going to start to try and make the move into public speaking. It's something that I have a passion for. I've never been shy, never been afraid to get up and talk in front of people. I have put on 3 seminars in the past, so I'm actually talking to quite a lot of the industry's big players now about putting on a fitness, mindset, nutrition seminar very soon. So just keep posted to the podcast. Obviously, I'll be sweet-talking my friend, Mr. Pat Dibbley, to getting involved on that. Won't I, Pat? Won't you be getting involved? You'll be getting involved, won't you, son? Huh? Are you going to get involved?
Sure.
Sure, to be sure. Excellent stuff. Pat, I know you got to fly off to jiu-jitsu, mate. it's been brilliant. It's 1 hour and 13 minutes of content, guys. If you love this podcast, please give it a share. Leave us a comment. Give us a like on iTunes. And yeah, we really hope you get some value from it. Pat's story is inspirational. And he's still not even 30. He's 29, but we thought we'd let him come on. So Pat, well done. Congrats on your success so far. Guys, hope you got some amazing value from this. Keep posted. The podcasts are going to be coming thick and fast. I'm really enjoying doing them. And look out for some huge developments later on in the year. So from me, I say goodbye. And Pat, too. So long. And guys, keep trucking. Look after yourselves. And I'll talk to you very soon.